Hi, I'm Warren Davies, the Unbreakable Farmer, and welcome to the Beyond the Back Paddock podcast, where I have the privilege to be joined by some amazing people I get to meet in my travels and share their stories and wisdom with you. After all, one of the most powerful assets of any community is the shared wisdom, and the best way to share that wisdom is through storytelling. So sit back and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome to the Beyond the Back Paddock podcast. I'm Warren Davies, the Unbreakable Farmer, and I'm your host. And I'm pleased that you've joined me today for today's episode. Before we get started, I'd like to thank all those loyal listeners that are jumping on week after week, and a shout out particularly to those who took the time to reach out, comment, and or as Shani did. Shout out to you, Shani. Hope you're enjoying your morning walk listening to the podcast. Shani did last week. She bought some socks from We Are Posse, supporting my last guest, Aidan Clark. Today's guest I actually met up in Shani's territory. We met at an advancing beef leaders function in Roma. He's a passionate beef producer from northern Queensland. And alongside his wife, Emily, and their three children, he runs a cattle business on adjustment in the area. And he has the goal of one day owning his own property. Since leaving school, Sam has been working in the Australian beef industry and has gained wide experience across the country. Sam has always enjoyed working alongside and learning from people. And he now shares those stories in his own podcast, A Place to Call Home. The stories they tell have inspired him to set the goal of one day owning his own place to call home. Sam's got a fascinating story. There's some ups and downs, and he's overcome some challenges. So please sit back and enjoy today's episode with Sam Fryer. Welcome to the podcast, Sam Fryer, mate. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on today. You know, as a fledgling podcaster, to have the bloke who's the podcast master of rural Australia at the moment, it's great to have you on, mate. And, yeah, it's really good to have a chat and catch up again.
Thank you, Warren. Thank you very much for having me on board. You're making me blush. I don't think I'm that. I'm only a year into this, so it's all very new to me as well.
Yeah, mate.
No, podcast.
You're kicking goals, and look, we met not long ago. You know, we've been following each other's work, but we met not long ago up in Roma, and you know, I really wanted to get you on to share your story but your journey and what you do, what fills in your day. But with all my podcasts, I want to start with the question: if you could share a moment from your past, from your life, that's changed your perspective on life and shape the person that you are today.
I'm going to go back to the start, Warren, and yep. I think definitely the biggest thing that made me who I am today is like I was born into a family, and my mum and dad my younger sister had cerebral palsy, and yep. That definitely really changed my perspective and really set the tone of my life. Growing up in a household with someone with a disability in rural Australia, facing those challenges that, like, seeing firsthand what mum and dad went through, raising Alex. And unfortunately, she passed away when she was very young. She was only 8 years and 8 days old when she passed away. And, due to complications from cerebral palsy. But it definitely, it's a real cornerstone of who I am and what I do and how I operate in the world. Yeah.
So how has that shaped you just to see, like, that different perspective of, you know, having a sibling that's got a disability or an illness or whatever, just to see what the day-to-day struggle, is that what shaped you? Or
yeah, I think it really made me, like, I probably didn't kick into a bit later in life when I was in my 20s and stuff and reflecting back on my childhood. But at the time, you know, you watch people, like, how they react with people with disability as you walk through when we finally do go to town and we see people and meet people, you know, through shopping centers and stuff, and then growing up to what she couldn't do and what I could do. And later on now, it makes me really grateful for, you know, having two arms, two legs, being able to walk around, being able to talk, being able to do things that she could never have done. And I really reflect on that a lot throughout my life. And I always, you know, when you kind of feel like something's a bit tough, I don't think I ever had it as tough as some of the days that she faced with, some of the challenges she faced with. So it's definitely given me that perspective on life and going forward, where, you know, you might be having a tough day, but at least you can walk. At least you're not in a wheelchair, you know. You're not having to be pushed around by other people, not having to be fed by other people. You know, and it gives you that bit of a perspective in the world that, you know, sometimes I think we get caught up a bit in our own lives too much, and we forget to reflect that, you know, there's a bigger picture out there. And some people, some of the challenges that you're facing may seem very big for you, but probably pale in insignificant compared to some others in the out there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's something that'll, for everyone that's just joining the podcast now, and who's this Sam Fryer guy? Well, that whole message is going to shine through, I will imagine, through our chat now, because that's something that I took away from when we met. You know, a lot of gratitude and also that reflection and you know, counting your blessings, that one, you did have a sister, but two, some of the lessons that you were taught from her journey and you know, obviously her passing and how that has changed you. So I look forward to digging a little bit deeper into that. But tell us a little bit more about Sam. Where you grew up, you know, and all that sort of stuff, where you actually live now, and just a bit about your story.
So I live just outside of Hughenden in North Queensland here. My wife and I, we have three beautiful kids that we raise on a property just outside of here that's owned by my parents. We lease part of this property off them, and I also work full-time for Q-Rider. And like you mentioned, I do have a podcast as well that I do, focusing on the next generation coming through. My passion's agriculture. I love agriculture. I love the beef industry. I love what I do, and I love where I live. So I think most of what I do circulates around those things. I love North Queensland. There's so much about this area that I think people take for granted that don't know it, haven't visited it. And I just love the beef industry and agriculture industry in general in Australia. You've got so many opportunities up here in Australia, and you start meeting people in the industry, and it's incredible how much people just want to help you out and see you succeed in it. And that's another reason why I love what I do and yeah, where I'm at.
It's something that, you know, I learnt when we met not long ago, like that there is a feel in that, in, you know, that northern central Queensland area, like where people kind of, like, you know, there's a lot of younger people, a lot of, you know, vibrancy around the industry. But my visit up to your area was a few years ago, and the area, the Flinders Shire, kind of where you live, it's a broad area, because like I went up there to talk, and, you know, half the Shire was moving into their seventh year of drought, and half the Shire was recovering from a monsoon, and that's how broad the area is. It's a big space out there.
It certainly is. And even like with my job with Q-Ride, I cover Northwestern Gulf. So I go right out to the border, up to the Gulf of Carpentaria, down to Boulia. And the difference in land that you come across is incredible. You go to the sparse, open this down stuff to right up in that Gulf country, forest country, they call it. And then you've got even desert country, which we are in now, where I live, up on this side of it. And it's, and the people in it, I think, are just as interesting, as cool as the countryside that they live in. And probably the biggest thing, the best thing that's happening in the area right now, is the amount of young people coming back. Like my kids, I think there's a wedge of people last like 5 or 6 years have been coming back home and coming back into the area. So all my kids have friends their age, which is awesome to see. And they're all around the town or in town itself. And there's a bit of buzz happening around this area at the moment, which is really positive for the future. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, one of the things encouraging young people. It's one of the things that happens in rural communities where kids move away and they never come back. And, you know, that's a great loss to a lot of communities. Yeah. It happens around here. You know, we're only 3 hours from Melbourne and, you know, a lot of family dairy farms, for instance. I know dairy is a tough industry, but a lot of kids went to uni and never returned. And, you know, and their mums and dads will work out, well, what do we do with the farm now? Because the kids don't want it. So we just get rid of it. Like it's, that's a tough part about living in my area. But something that really resonated with me when I, like, been up into that area a number of times speaking, and, you know, just there is a vibrancy, there is some challenges, like there is in every area, but that's just part and parcel. So tell us a little bit about your job, what you do with QRider, what's your role there?
So I'm the regional area manager. So a lot of the time, QRider's, to put it basic, with a government bank, we do a lot of concessional loans like first start loans, sustainability loans to help people entering into agriculture or wanting to build a sustainable business or going through succession. There's a lot of different ways they can use our loans that we have set up. And our other arm is really our disaster stuff. So following on from the start of the year when we had Cyclone Jasper up in the far north, I went across there and helped out the other regional managers. Up that way, we all went up and we go to communities, go to small businesses, go to primary producers, and there's grants and stuff that the governments have available and loans that can help them through. And we really show them what tools and what's available and help them put in the applications and hopefully get them back on their feet following after disasters. So that's the two kind of branches that we work with. And every now and then there might be some funding that comes out, like during COVID, QRider was used for a lot of that, getting the funding out in the state. And then at the moment, we've got a drought preparedness program that's happening. So, you know, as you mentioned, a couple of years ago, we had 7 years, 8 years of drought up here. You know, we've been fortunate to have a pretty good season. So, but at the moment, there's funding available for people to put waters out. And it's really quite interesting because with the job, you know, you might be talking to, one day you'd be talking to people who've just been smashed by a cyclone. You know, their business is just under the pump. They've been hammered. And, you know, we're trying to help them out to get them back on their feet. And then probably the next day you're talking to a young family who's going through succession with their parents, looking to ways to enter into the industry. So it's very varied from day to day. And you know, I really enjoy that. Yeah.
You've got lots on your plate, mate. As you said, you've got a young family and you've also, as you said, you've got your own little beef enterprise as well. So tell us a little bit about that and what's going on in that part of your life.
Oh, Warren, just chasing that dream. Hey, chasing that dream of one day becoming a full-time primary producer. And we are just a bit of country around and currently we lease a bit of this country here back at where I live. We're home here. So we were essentially part of a family business with my family back in the day. And a couple of years ago, going through a succession process there, which is a bit of a ride and something that I found quite difficult going through, is that it wasn't going to work out exactly how it was planned. And we decided to get out of that business and have a crack ourselves. And really, we went through a process for a couple of years where we were leasing country and adjusting country, and we still do, looking to become a full-time prime producer. And we started recently having these conversations with my parents again about looking at a different angle, maybe a lease with an option to buy, path to go down to try and help and do this succession a different way. But at the moment we're just focusing on ourselves and our business and looking to grow something there to achieve that dream, hopefully.
And that's all cattle. That's you just trading just, cattle.
Do a bit of breeding and trading. So we've got I've got a mob of heifers here, if you want a mob of heifers, Warren, that I'm trying to get out of. But and we also got a breeder mob as well. So just a trading to keep the cash flow going and a bit of a breeder mob that we're trying to really focus on just the quality of those breeders. So every now and then we might step out of a trade mob and keep a handful of the really nice ones to join in our breeder mob. And that's kind of the goal of slowly building those breeder mob breeder numbers up over time. Yeah.
Yeah, mate, I like cows that you can cuddle, not ones that want to kill you.
No, this isn't.
Them Central Queensland cattle. Don't send them down here.
No, this is the big topic I've been talking about on the podcast. I'm going to approach on it a bit more. Is this paradigm shift that you know, like I've got potties and stuff out here you can pat out in the mob, but I think, you know, everyone has this perception of people in the north that it's a wild setup. But you know, we don't like for our operation, we don't use any helicopters or anything like that. I can get them in on one bike on myself, get this mob in, and most of our cows when we're processing, we have the kids in the yard helping us, like in the crush and opening slide gates. And I think it's something that I'm trying to portray this message as well through the podcast as well, as like have that paradigm shift of what happens up north. But yeah, it's a hard one to break. Yeah.
So we've covered off your kind of your day job and then your farming job, but you've also created the big waves and making big inroads in the podcasting world. Now, I binged on my whatever it was, 6 hours of driving from Brisbane to Roma when we first met, because I'd only listened to only a couple of your podcasts, but then I think I got the whole catalog in those that trip back and forth to Brisbane. But it's very inspiring, mate. Like, and as I said, we had this chat when we met up, and you know, there's some really good topics on there. But it's really, you can put it into your words, but it's like giving up, you know, sharing information around different angles and how to, you know, do what you're doing at the moment and chase that dream of becoming that full-time primary producer. And there's some really interesting ones like the, like we talked about that day, the chicken farmer. It kind of inspired me that all of a sudden this bloke's turning over $1 million from selling eggs and chooks and $60 chooks to restaurants and all that sort of stuff, and he only started off with a couple of caravans. So tell us, how did the podcast come about? How was it born? And you better tell us what the name is as well, mate.
So the podcast is called A Place to Call Home. And it all came about after the succession, like I talked about, with us getting out of the family business. I was a bit lost and I still really wanted to chase that dream. And I just didn't quite know how to do it. So I went from asking a lot of friends and people who have done it, or people I looked up to in the industry, how they've gone about it. And a mate of mine was like, after a few beers one night, he said, you know, you should do a podcast on this. This is, you know, people want to hear this stuff. So I spent the time Googling and YouTubing on how to do a podcast just a little over a year and a half ago now. And yeah, it's been a really interesting journey. And the big thing I try and focus on is I'm just not looking for the norms. I'm looking for people who have done something a little bit different, whether they've, you know, like you mentioned, Tim Eyes there from the food farm. You know, he owns a little block, but a house, and then he leases his whole operation and doing paddock to plate on all lease country. And he has several employees, and you know, then I think of other people like Spring Hill Beef, Adam Turner, who's gone from doing car, like fixing up smash cars from hail damage to now running Spring Hill Beef, where they do paddock to plate type of enterprise. So, and even I've touched on recently a lot of succession stuff. So I think of Ashley Kirk near Rocky there, going through succession process where, you know, they ended up splitting away from their family business and doing their own thing. So the whole idea was that I just wanted to create a resource to help this next generation like myself that were a bit lost and needed a bit of guide. And it's been an incredible journey. I've learned so much, and probably the coolest thing from it has been the feedback from people saying, you know, I've listened to this episode and we've started a succession conversation, or I listen to this episode and I'm now going to talk to my bank, or I'm talking to my family about succession, or talking to Q Rider about doing a first start loan, which has been really cool, because it's just trying to put the ideas out there to help the people that are coming through that will end up, you know, running this industry of ours.
Yeah, and I think that's the important part. It's the future. And, you know, if young people aren't attracted to the industry, where's the industry going to be? So we need, and also that, you know, that old, I suppose that old thinking model of, you know, you either take over the family farm or you've got to have millions of dollars. Yeah. But, you know, listening to some of the guests on your podcast, like there's so many different options. And as me, as an old fella, buddy, listening to that, I was even inspired. Like, I'm thinking, where can I get a caravan from and a bloody bunch of chooks? And I can, you know, I reckon I can run that out there. Like, it gets the mind thinking. So, yeah, for people that are feeling stuck and go, I really want to make my way in this industry, but how am I going to do it? It's a really good resource to give people that information.
I must say, Warren, I have to be corrected there that I keep saying the next generation because that's kind of the line that I came up with when I started it. But I've been corrected by lots of people that it's not just for the next generation. I've got messages from a few people that are in the older generation or above me that say, you know, it's just, you're not just helping them, you're helping us as well, thinking of different ways. Or those people that are maybe in their 50s that are looking, still chasing that dream of being on a bit of land somewhere, which is awesome to see. So I've got to try and come up with a new tagline for it now.
what is the next generation? You know, the 60s, the new 30, they reckon. Yeah. So yeah, you just run with that anyway.
I'll go with it.
Yeah, one of the interesting things I find about doing what I do, you know, sharing my story, which obviously includes a little bit about succession planning or lack of, which had a major impact on my mental health. And succession planning and mental health, kind of particularly in Queensland, I find this more often that, you know, I'm coupled with a succession planner. Like if there's more than one guest speaker, there's generally either a financial advisor or a rural financial counselor or a succession planning expert that's part of the speaker panel. There's something about Queensland that you know, especially up your way, where that's a big topic. It's still kind of a little bit of a really tricky minefield kind of topic to bring up in, around our way. I don't know if that's because we're predominantly, you know, horticulture or orchards, and dairy, where infrastructure infrastructure costs are huge, and you know, farms, you can't just go and buy a bit of dirt for, you know, $1,000 an acre or whatever because of the infrastructure that's on them. So it's a tricky subject. How do you feel? You know, you said you get a lot of feedback. How do you feel that conversation around succession planning goes these days? Is it getting easier?
I think it's interesting. Like my personal story is we've tried and we're still trying a different way to try and make something work. But initially we went through a really tough period there where I suppose you walk into it like a lot of these families where the parents obviously hold the main asset, they're running the business, and you're coming in as the next generation, and you sometimes are in the spot where you're always being told this will be yours one day. And sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes, you know, you might be 50 or 60 and you end up turning around, which I've seen a fair bit of, where they'll end up turning around and they finally get the chance to have a crack or hands down to them or whatever happens. And, you know, the business isn't viable, or they end up, say, not being there. The kids end up getting turned away because there's no option to come back into the business. So because there's no succession plan in place. And I think it's interesting. Some of the interesting conversation I've had is trying to understand the difference between estate planning and succession planning when it comes to farming. So it's all good having an estate plan where, you know, your parents die or the parent or whoever died, and this is how it's split up the business and the money that's gone. But to actually enable a good succession plan means the long-term benefit of the business and of that family and that really generational wealth creation, which is, you know, a lot of this, we're very asset-rich, cash-poor in agriculture, and everyone knows this. We've all got, you know, on the books, we've got a high amount of equity there, or depending on what situation we've got, should hopefully have some decent equity, large asset, but usually poor cash flow. So it's very hard to bring in this next generation and help them. And you can see that from the older generation when they're trying to. As a younger generation, they're coming in going, well, look, let me have a crack at it. But they sometimes have a bit of good cash flow because they might be working off farm, but they've got no asset. And the biggest opportunity I see in this is trying to think of different ways of not just the handing over the land and the business, or maybe it might be an option like this, leasing off the land off the parents, or them running the management of the business and keeping the land separate in their parents' name. Or, you know, we've got to try and think a bit differently than the old traditional way of, well, you turn 40, here, you know, buy into this business, buy into the whole shebang. So I'm probably running around in circles a bit there, Warren, but I think it's just what I'm trying to do with the podcast is give people different options of ways people have done it and really also highlight ways people have done it that hasn't worked as well. Because I think you've got to look at both sides, because hopefully one day when you do sit down as a family and you go to succession and you start doing succession planning, you know, you can kind of have a bit of a background of what's worked and what hasn't for other people, and something might work for you that's worked for other people. So that's what I'm hoping to do, is share a bit of that insight and create some conversations, really. Yeah.
Yeah. And you are achieving that, mate. You're as I said, you're going gangbusters with the podcast. You're getting plenty of people following, and as you said, getting plenty of feedback, which is the important thing of doing it. As I said, when I go, do particularly in Queensland, but in a lot of areas that coupled with that succession planning. So, and you've heard my story a bit. Succession planning can also impact the mental health of people. And that's one of the reasons why these conversations need to be had. But I just want to delve a little bit deeper into your own story and your own mental health journey, if you don't mind. We sat there, and if anyone just saw still photos, it just looked like two blokes having a couple of cans up in front of a room, and that was what we were doing. But we're actually sharing stories, which was really good. It was a great night. But can you share a little bit about how you've struggled with your own mental health a little bit?
Yeah. So I've always kind of had a bit of a running battle, I'd say, throughout life. And I think the ending point coming back to succession stuff was it kind of resurfaced again, going through that process. But initially it did start off very young with going with Alex. That made a big imprint on me as a child going through school. And finishing up at school, we didn't have any of the, like, we always got told how to eat healthy, exercise properly, but never actually had to look after your mind and your mental health. And that was probably something I really needed at school at that time, was that type of, how to look after yourself properly, with your mental health properly. Because after school, I was involved in an accident where I accidentally got my arm caught up in the back wheel of a motorbike. And my arm got pulled through the cog of a motorbike with the halter I was holding, and snapped the bone, and ended up getting stuck, and I had to end up getting some help to actually pull it out. So I was supposed to be the light horseman for an Anzac Day parade, and the instructor who was with me, who was riding the bike, he came out and he saw me catching these horses, and he said, "No, you can't ride the horses in. You've got to, because you don't have a helmet, jump on the back of the bike, and I'll take you in." And as I jumped on the back, he took off, and my arm wrapped in the back wheel and snapped him. And we were in a paddock there behind in Longreach there, because I was at the Longreach Ag College when I did it, and I was there for a long time before help came. I ended up getting flown out by RFDS to Rocky, getting my arm put back together, and then ended up going to Brisbane to actually have more surgeries to get it fixed up. And that was really, that accident was the big start. Again, it kind of resurfaced a lot of stuff I was struggling with younger years through school, through high school and stuff like that. And, when you're young, you kind of look at other ways to try and medicate yourself. Definitely so. I probably drank and partied a bit too hard when I was younger. I was looking for ways to try and, to try and work through some of the stuff that was going on inside my head. And I definitely pushed it a bit too far in times. And, as you are being young male, you do everything that you're not supposed to. I remember going, but as you know, everyone goes through these stages, but I just feel like I probably pushed it a bit too much. Just really seeking something and wanting, I wouldn't say it'd be attention seeking, but it'd more be that thrill seeking, that adrenaline that I was chasing a bit more, a lot of stuff that I did. And I didn't get any help in that process, but I was lucky enough that I met my now wife, and Emily, she kind of really straightened me out a fair bit during this period. She kind of became, I would say, my touchstone and someone I could actually start talking to and learning how to talk to people about this process. And I was getting myself on track, I would say. And then a few years later, I was in my early 20s, I was involved in a workplace accident, which ended up with the work colleague passing away. Operating a machine at the time, and he was accidentally crushed and passed away on site at the station I was working at. And look, this is really where it kind of really come to the forefront. I spent that whole rest of the year, I would say, in and out of hospital with different rashes. I'd rash up at night and really having nightmares going through every night trying to go to sleep. And it was really something I struggled with during this year. And it wasn't until the end of the year when I actually got home and finished up the year on the station that I broke down at the dining table with mum and dad, and they suggested I go and see someone, a specialist. And that was really the start of me putting together and putting tools in place, learning how to look after myself mentally. And I saw a lovely lady in Townsville who did an amazing job, and she taught me a lot, gave me a lot of tools, taught me a lot of skills that I still use today. And I started getting myself back on track, but I was in a good spot there for a couple of years. And then unfortunately, we went through a succession process three years ago, and I really hit a wall with that. And the same thing, I went off the rails a bit, where I just was in this downward spiral, and I decided to go back and see her again in Townsville. And you know, it's just that the biggest learning from that was, like, even though you might have the tools, you might be in a position where you go through this process, sometimes you need to come back and get a check in, get yourself back on track again, and really put you back on the right rail, so you're going the right way in life. And that's what she did. And really now I'm in a point where I do still do a check-in with TX every now and then. I do call those guys which is an amazing service. But I'd say that probably my biggest thing is just really watching what I eat, working out, and really focusing on not drinking too much alcohol would be my three things, yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned reaching out for support, and you mentioned TX, and obviously you were a bit of the face of the campaign for Don't Keep It Under Your Hat. To tell us a little bit about what that experience was like the first time, because that's one of the things that I suppose stops people reaching out for help. They get a bit daunted about that first conversation with someone when, you know, you are struggling, and having to reach out to someone, it's quite overwhelming in itself, let alone dealing with whatever you're dealing with. How did that process go for you?
Initially, it wasn't easy, I would say. Like, I was very lucky where my parents were the ones that encouraged me to go see someone, and I had the support of Emily, and as well as her family. But when you initially go in there, I think everyone has this perception of what it's going to be like, you know, a really clinical type of sitting in a chair, leaning back and speaking to someone. But it's not. It's not like that. And I had all these views, I suppose, in my mind before walking in, a bit of a paradigm of what it was going to be like. And my neighbour, who we grew up with, a good family friends, he saw her as well. And he really encouraged me. And we had a bit of a chat beforehand and also after. And it was just like, when you do go in there, you just got to realise you sit on a couch in a really comfortable position. Like, you know, it's a really homely feel in this room. And you just don't dive straight into it. It's not like you're sitting here telling, you know, going deep diving straight in. Usually it's a bit of light chat. And then whatever comes up. And as you get more comfortable, then they might dive into certain things that you want to talk about. And that was probably my biggest thing, is even now, like, I still struggle a bit talking about some of the stuff I've gone through in my life, because it is such a touchy, like, it's so much pain and stuff that goes on inside. But you kind of get comfortable with talking about it. And when you are talking in those situations, I find it's a lot easier to talk about. And also, I'd almost say you're numbing that pain or taking away that pain a bit. Like, it's still, you've got to monitor it. But I find it's by talking about some of the stuff I've gone through in life, it actually helps me, and hopefully helps a lot of other people out there as well, which is the main reason why I do it, is that. But also, it helps yourself when you are talking about it, because it's not just internally running around in your head all the time. So,
yeah. It's that cathartic experience, yeah, of being able to just get it outside yourself, because, and like you said, by sharing those stories, there's power in that. And that's, you know, that's what I, you know, part of my mission, you know, about inspiring conversations is, you know, by sharing my story, hopefully that gives other people permission to share theirs. And, you know, you've, as you said, you've experienced some stuff over your time, like with your sister, and then, you know, with your own mental health battles, with your accident. And then obviously, you know, the death of a work colleague is pretty full on. So you deal with you're dealing with a fair bit, and so being able to get that out and keep sharing it and not bottle it up is really important part. You said about some of your tools and, you know, not drinking alcohol and that, but what are some of the other, I suppose, tools that you learnt from that experience of going and seeing someone? What were some of the other tools, or what are some of the tools that you use now on a daily basis to keep you on track, or how do you know if you're starting to fall back into old habits? What are some of the strategies that you use?
Yeah, I must say, I must correct myself if I said that, but yeah, I still do enjoy a drink. I just don't drink as much as I used to, I must say.
I understand that. It's a bit like myself, mate. Back in my either teenage or early 20s, you used to drink a lot more, but now it's just, you know, you don't have to, or I don't feel the inclination to have to do that. So no. Still enjoy beer, but at the same time, you don't have to have 20.
No, exactly. So I think probably some, first off, some of my things I do to make sure and ensure my mental health well-being is going well is I try and I do have a bit of a routine. I like to get up early. I like to go for a walk or a run in the morning. I went for a run this morning with the dogs. I try and fit in some form of workout as well. Like, it's very physical. I've got to work out. I feel better, the endorphins from working out. Eating right is a big thing. Junk in, junk out, as they say. I find if you go away on a weekend like we have been, and at this birthday party, and I had a few cakes and bickies and all the rest of it, I just feel like crap for the next couple of days after while you're trying to work through that. So it's a big thing trying to eat right, get your diet right. And then the other thing would be also, I and this is probably something having three kids is a bit of a challenge, is I try and have that time of switching off at night where I try and read before I go to sleep, so my mind's not working, turning overboard as well. If you sit up watching TV, I find it takes me longer to fall asleep than what it does if I was laying in bed reading a book. And sleep is the biggest, best recovery that you can do. If you get your couple of hours, your 7 or 8 hours sleep, that is the best thing you can do for your mind and body, I find. And but I do have times where you do slip off, like you mentioned. You might go through a holiday and you slip out of routine, and I will catch myself in those moments where I will start, the negative thoughts start coming back. And, you know, just because I'm not looking after myself as well, and I'm not sticking to my train of where I'm not reading, I'm not doing a workout, I'm not stretching or whatever I'm doing, if I slip off that, I'll find myself mentally going over the edge. So it's a bit of a reminder of, I try and pull myself back. And in terms of the tools and stuff like that, I've got a diary. I don't really journal, but I like to keep track of what I'm up to on a day. So, you know, when you realize you've missed a few days or something like that, you need to kind of force yourself, you got to have that bit of self-drive to get yourself out of bed and go for a run, go do a workout. And drinking's, on terms of the drinking part, it's probably one of those things where everyone loves a social occasion, and I really do enjoy it, but I find that once we're home, like I don't really drink at home here. I might have the odd wine on a weekend, and it's just that same thing. It's just that crap in, crap out. Like if you want to be productive and have the right mindset. There's a good book I read a couple of years ago. It was gut. It was all about how your gut affects, and what you put in your body affects everything in yourself, whether it is physical or your mental health. And it was a big turning point for me with reading that book, because it was just, it really brought to life how, you know, your gut is one of your biggest organs, and it's just the effects that it has the whole way through and the reason why you feel this way. So for those out there that may be a bit off track, I would suggest it'd be pretty interesting. Just try and maybe have a sober week, and have a week of no chocolate or something like that, or no sugar. And you know, you might be, if you're having this bit of a tough run, you'll actually start feeling better, or maybe just go for a walk. And those endorphins are getting the sunlight on your body, especially in the morning sun, is an incredible feeling. So they're probably a couple of my things I try and use. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and they're good tools. Like, yeah, one, just that getting that going for a walk, getting that in nature, yeah. Even though, you know, and it sounds, it's really a strange one when you're standing in front of a group of farmers and say, go for a walk, you know, get in, out in nature, and they go, oh, I've been out in nature all day and I don't really have, you know. But it is, it's a different thing. You can switch off, and that, and it also sets that boundary that, you know, work's finished, now I'm going to do something for myself, and it's going for that walk, and maybe I can enjoy, you know, the birds singing, all that, instead of going, oh, shit, there's a bloody broken stock trough, I've got to go and fix that, or, yeah, or like yourself this morning, there's, you know, water spurting out of a riser and you've got to go and try and sort that out, because, you know, but that's work. And then you can kind of create that boundary, shut that off and go, right, I'm going for a walk now. No phones, no nothing, unless you want to listen to a podcast. Good podcast. I don't know. There's a couple. There's a couple of those going around.
I was going to add, Warren, like talking about getting off farm, my wife and I, Emily and I, are heavily involved in a lot of community stuff here, especially with the kids. And I reckon that's a great way. Like this afternoon, we got footy training on, the young fellas footy training. And it's a great way, because you go there, you can't do work when you're at these things. So it's a great way to get off farm. And especially if you are a primary producer and you get stuck in that rut of where you're here, you're seeing what you got to do the next day, you never leave the business. But if you actually go out, join a community group, go to footy training or do something like that, it's a great way to reset too, because you're around other people and you're in a different atmosphere and you usually come back with a little bit of a buzz too. Yeah.
And just to clarify for all us Victorians, you're actually talking about the
rugby league.
It's not really football. It's not really football. Like, shit. It's not, you know. Oh. I actually said when I had Wally Lewis on, like, we had a bit of banter off camera, off recording about that. But yeah, no, it's not the real game. It's the one that they play up.
Yeah, it's rugby. The one they play in heaven.
Yeah, that's right. Mate, that's you've shared some really good things there that, you know, people can use and put in their toolbox, and I think the important thing for everybody, you know, not everyone's got kids or not involved in community, but finding the right thing for you that does the job for you to, you know, get a bit of time outside your head and free up a bit of space. And I'm a really great believer, and, you know, I've got an afternoon, I've got to clear some emails and get some proposals out, and I'm a great believer by doing that, that's going to create a vacuum and suck some more stuff in. So, you know, I think that's, you know, by clearing your mind, you know, doing something that's, you know, something that's real mindful for yourself, like whether it's at kids' sport or going for a walk, it creates a bit of a vacuum and or a space that lets some other good stuff in. So I think that's a really good, there are a couple of really good tools that people can use. I'm conscious of our time, and obviously we don't want to hold you from footy training, buddy. You don't even actually kick the thing. So
every day, call it footy. Every day.
It's a whole different thing. That was my experience of going into your area when I did a speaking gig. It was not really a gig, like how could I call it that, but I went and met with a group of farmers and then jumped on a bus and drove back into Townsville with them and watched the first game at the new Cowboy Stadium or whatever it's called, that stadium. And that was my first ever experience of NRL football. And it actually wasn't a bad game when you had someone sitting next to you trying to interpret what they were actually doing. But I knew that you had to clap because the flames went in the air, so you just clap at that time. For anyone that doesn't know NRL, that's the key. You just clap when the flames go in the air, and then you should be right. No one will look at you.
I must say too, Warren, if you go anywhere north of Rocky, you know it's a Cowboys fan too. So, you know, and everyone, the king of the north is Jonathan Thurston still up here. So you've got to be careful of what you say about the Cowboys and JT. So,
exactly. You've got to, I wouldn't say too much up there because you end up getting, you mightn't find me way back home because it's a big wide space and there's a lot of hidey spots out there. I want to ask you a couple of questions before I let you go, yeah. Unless you've got anything else that you would like to add. But, like, mate, I knew this would be a fun chat, as well as, you know, with some really, you know, there's some stuff that you've gone through in your life and you found, you've had your ups and downs and you found your way through, and some of those tools that you've shared are really good. But I want to ask you, have you or do you know of a hidden talent or skill that you have that most people don't know about? What is that skill? What is a hidden talent that Sam has that nobody knows about?
Oh, I'm trying to think now. I'm pretty open with a lot of people, Warren, but all right, hidden talent. I wouldn't say hidden, but it's something that a lot of people don't know, is that I used to sing at pubs. So I still play guitar a little bit, not as much nowhere near as I used to. But, I used to sing at pubs and a few events and stuff like that, just a bit of a solo thing, yeah.
So is that your other Spotify channel the back catalogue of Sam
there's,
Fry?
There's nothing like that. I think the joke was in both my dad and my sister are amazing singers. And I think the joke was in town, and I've only, because I've got another sister as well, Anna. And the joke was that I'm the fourth best singer in the family. So there's, you know, it's mum, dad, and Anna, and then me. So
yeah, right. very good. Now, this could actually answer my next question. If you could have any superpower for 24 hours, what would it be, and how would you use it?
Got asked this one the other day actually, and I think I'm going to change my answer. I've always wanted to fly, and it's probably something I'm going to – a hobby. If I had a spare, God knows how much, to get my private pilot's license, but I think it would be to fly like Superman. I just love the idea of flying, and it is probably a bit of a – it is a dream of mine. And you could – I don't know if you can see in the background, but I'm a bit of a plane nut too, so – oh, no. If you've got to have your outside hobby. So my hobby is actually, I do like some modelling and stuff like that. So that's a short Sutherland. So World War II flying boat. And I've got I've got a few others up here that I do on a rainy day. It's just, so it's, you know, you find a hobby that's not work related. It's nothing to do with work. And, but yeah, I reckon be able to fly would be an absolute just dream.
Yeah. Modeling, that's a really interesting mindfulness exercise, actually, because the concentration that's needed to put models together, you can't think about too much else. So, you know, that's a good way of getting outside your head and having something that you're focusing on, especially if you're a bit like me, where your mind's racing all the time. As a kid, I was in the Air League as a kid when I was growing up in Melbourne, and I was mad planes and all that sort of stuff, and used to love doing some modelling and painting and making them look like what they were meant to look like. It's a great thing to do. So, that's an interesting thing. So, superpower would be flying, and I just need to clarify, that was obviously in a plane, or you just like to learn how to flap your wings and off you go.
No, superpower would be flying like Superman, but I always have the dream of one day learning to fly a plane. So, yeah, if I had one superpower. Yeah.
So how would you use that? Ooh. What would you use that superpower for?
I just love to see the world. I really love traveling. And I think it's something I only did a little bit because we got married pretty – well, we're not young, but we kind of went out workforce. And I think with everything else going on, we didn't travel as much as I would have liked to before the kids. So I'd love to get out, and I think there's some amazing places in the world to see that I really do want to see, and I would just be flying around checking out some of the amazing sights, yeah.
And obviously it would make work a lot easier too, considering the country that you've got to cover up there. And anyone that hasn't been to North Central Queensland, it is a big place. And so you cover a fair bit of territory. So, yeah, flying would be quite good. It would make your job really easy. I'm gonna ask this question. I think you've kind of already answered it in the earlier part of the podcast, but have you got a goal or a dream that you've had since childhood that you'd still like to achieve? Now, I'm thinking, yeah, you want to own a bit of land, but is there anything else that you were, you know, that you used to dream of as a kid and just still haven't achieved it and would love to?
It's definitely that land ownership. Definitely dream and the goal of mine is always, I'd change that a little bit by being full-time prime producer. I think, you know, looking at it a bit differently, land ownership would be amazing. But if there's a way around where I could be a full-time primary producer of leasing country and stuff like that, that's an absolute goal and dream. And I know I mentioned that earlier, but definitely it's something that I just, I've always wanted to do that. I always wanted to be that.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask if there was a different, but I knew that would be the answer. And I loved how you had to check yourself when you said we or me, or I say Emily just has to come along for the journey.
I know.
She hasn't got much choice.
No, she does. She's just as passionate as me. I do have to check myself with that sometimes, because I think we get so caught up with the me's and the I's is you know, the big thing, you've got to have a good rowing buddy in life. And like, I can't do anything I do in terms of the podcast, talking mental health or the business without Emily. And she's the big reason why pretty I'm here talking to you, is that if it wasn't for her support, I wouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. Great answer, mate. That's one, your brownie point should be right now for another week. And the last question, if you went rock down to footy training tonight and you ran into your younger self, what advice would you give?
Back yourself. I've always been a shocker of self-doubt, and I wish someone would have told me that earlier. I got the opportunity to speak at the Rocky Intercollegiate Meet Judging Competition. That was the biggest thing I told them, was I read them the Man in the Arena quote and just said, just back yourself. You know, don't worry about it when else thinks. You don't have to focus on that. It's about your life. It's your journey. And that's the only one that you're in this with. It doesn't matter about anyone else outside. It's you standing in the arena. That's what really counts.
Yeah. And not worrying about what how people judge
exactly.
You if they're standing on the outside of that arena and unless they want to jump in with
exactly.
You, don't let their opinions or anything else enter your head. Mate, it's been a great chat. Really appreciate you coming on, and you know, I knew that it would be a good chat. Just as we both said that night in Roma, it's just you just get up there and chat like you're just having a beer with a mate, and that's what it's turned out. And I'm glad that we've met, and that's one of the starting point of why I wanted to start my podcast, was to share stories of the great people that I, you know, have the privilege of meeting in my speaking journey as I travel around the country. And you're definitely one of them, mate. You've made a lasting imprint on me, and you know, I can't wait till the next time we get to catch up, and it'll be I'm sure it'll be just as good as the first time. So, mate, appreciate your time. And thanks for coming on. And I suppose I should add at the end, so if anyone wants to listen to your podcast, where do they have to probably be on a waiting list or something like that. But where's the best place to catch up with your podcast?
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to say a spiel, Warren. And, yeah, definitely you can find it on all your podcast platforms, from Apple, Spotify, Google, you name it, it's there. So just have a look on your podcast player and you'll find the podcast A Place to Call Home.
Yeah. And do yourself a favour. One of the best hats I've got in my cupboard is the cap that you gave me that night. Everyone loves it. Even my wife does. So get on and buy one. You can buy merch on your website. I've seen that. So, yeah, get on and put an order in and get one, because they're a great hat. So good on you, mate. I appreciate your time. Thanks for jumping on and having a chat. And, look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thank you, Warren. Thank you very much. And looking forward to catching up with you, because it's an absolute blast in Roma. And I appreciate you allowing me to tell my story on your podcast.
Good on you, mate. Cheers. Well, that was a great chat with Sam, and I appreciate his time coming on the podcast and sharing his story. You can catch up with other stories too on the Beyond the Back Paddock podcast by going to www.beyondthebackpaddock.com.au, listening, subscribing, and commenting. If you enjoy the episodes, please share your comments, tell me what you think, and if you've got any guests that you would like to hear from, please let me know and I'll see if I can track them down. I've had some really great guests on recently, like Wally Lewis and Leela McDougall, who is the star producer and writer of Just a Farmer, the movie, along with a lot of other guests. So check out the back catalogue and tell me what you think. Until next week, thanks for listening again and take care. Thanks for joining me on today's podcast. I appreciate any feedback and I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Beyond the Back Paddock podcast.